planet is a lonely speck in the great cosmic dark.
Hi, this is Chrissy.
And I'm Marie.
And you're listening to Alt Pop Repeat,
a show where we get into the nitty-gritty around counterculture, alternative culture, and sync it up with what?
With pop culture.
Yeah, man. That's what we do.
There we go.
High five. Yes. Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back, everybody.
We are episode six. Marie's now doing my echo.
I'm your echo.
Yes. And we're episode six of Alt Pop Repeat.
Marie's the best.
Right. So let's reminisce of our
present.
Right. Of our 6 months of Alt Pop Repeat.
We do.
Let's jump in our time machine. Ready?
All right. All right. Episode one featuring guest
Jeremy Kenyon, Lockyer Corbell.
Can we just do one more time machine?
Yes, we can.
Okay, back in the time machine. Welcome to episode two, where we're joined with guest
George Strombolopoulos.
All right, cool. That was fun in the time
machine. Right.
Let's continue on. Episode three.
Right, we had Matthew Santoro.
Okay, episode four.
We had Biff Naked.
Episode five.
Dr. Jennifer Fried, PhD. And who is on the show today, Marie?
Well, the illustrious comedian, supreme Canadian of all hearts and stunning minds. I don't know. None of those words made sense. They were all in very weird orders. But it's Dave Foley. Dave Foley is with us today. Long story short, Dave Foley is with
and
us today.
Notably known for being in Kids in the Hall, an amazing sketch comedy series that was going on for about at least five seasons.
But
they're coming back out with it, nice. And Amazon Prime Video is doing a reboot of it. We don't know the date that it's coming out, but we're all really jacked for that one. We got to talk about...
That's the thing, because we're not talking about comedy with him. I mean, some people will be just thinking that, but we're not. We're talking with him about UFOs, cancel culture and UFOs.
Yes, and we're talking about the Tic Tac event and how the Pentagon came forward and said that the footage is real. And we also get to talk about how and why Dave decided to repent and started believing in UFOs.
Great Scott!
Yeah, and
oh my gosh, we forgot
that.
How could we forget
Jerry McBear.
Jeremy Kenyon Lockyer Corbell joins us in this episode too, along with Dave Foley.
Yeah, let's just get back into that time machine, travel back to present day, and kick up the clip of the interview.
And in the end, we sync it up.
Mm-hmm.
People that go along with group thinking, frustrating and annoying.
Yeah, I agree.
And
it's the cattle mentality.
Yeah, and to me, it this story fits in well with stuff that I, you know, as I've talked to you before about, like, you know, Noam Chomsky wrote a book called Manufacturing Consent, which is taken from a line from the original creator of what is modern propaganda, which was an American guy who essentially created the public relations industry.
Bernays.
Right? Yeah, Bernays.
Yeah.
Edward Bernays.
Yeah, and the phrase manufactured consent comes from his book. And Chomsky talks about how he applies it to, you know, political issues and, you know, global politics and military issues.
Yeah.
You know, and applies it to things like, why don't any, you know, respectable intellectuals really discuss Israel?
Right.
You know, and what's going on there. You know, and that was one of the things Chomsky looked at, and he called it manufacturing consent, where there are just topics and facts that serious people just don't look at and don't talk about.
Yeah.
And that applies, I think, to the UFO story. And he said you don't really need a massive conspiracy. You just need to create an environment in which people who want to be taken seriously will not think about these things. And anyone who does think about them will not be taken seriously. And the massive power of ridicule to silence people.
It's petrifying to people.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. You talked about, like, you know, like I said, like fighter pilots who go out and fly in the most dangerous machines we've ever built into areas where people are trying to kill them. Yeah. Go out and do this without any fear. But if they see a UFO, they come back and are afraid to mention it. Like, the power of ridicule is bizarre.
And do people think they're crazy?
It's yeah.
Like, but and what does and it matter at the end of the day? You know, I'm thinking like, what does it really matter at the end of the day? We have so many people, so many different opinions and so many things to talk about that we really need to start accepting that we're going into an age where you kind of have to, I'm of the mind, you just got to put it out there.
Yeah. You know? But we're still in a world where ridicule can destroy your life.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's so true. I'm so small. No, I'm like, yeah, cool. Yeah, ridicule.
If you become ridiculed, you can really in pop culture become a non-person.
Yeah.
You become just a joke and that's it.
Who's a good example of that?
It's coming out and saying things that are not mainstream ideas. People band together then, and they band together, and then they band together to do hate. You know, and that's the thing. And that's I can imagine being on the other end and making a joke or anything else or a statement, and then someone decides to just get at me. Your whole life is destroyed.
But it doesn't even go on the street then if it becomes that large, and it could be a mistake. People make mistakes all the time. Is there an example of it? I mean, I'm thinking in my head. I'm like Tom Cruise whenever he was on Oprah and he was like he was goofy and everyone was, and then he did that video for Scientology and he sounded like a crack, but he still
there's still that one tweet. Wasn't there a tweet that someone made a racist comment and she got on a plane, and then she was flying over to Europe and she made some kind of like I don't know the racist joke, but then when she got off the plane
her career was over.
And then people just attacked her and it was for days on end. People were sending her death threats. And she made a joke and it was totally inappropriate. It was totally inappropriate. But I don't think it's warrant for someone to send you a death threat because of a joke.
Yeah, you just look at the consequence of that, right? So you've got a fighter pilot, let's say 10 years ago,
right?
Where do they report that they saw a disc spinning, hovering, that then outmaneuvered their craft, shut down their radar and weapon systems? I mean, how do they really report that? And then if they had a personal experience that goes beyond what they physically saw, there was nowhere to report that. You have your wings taken away. You're not getting put up back into combat, and what you've lived and breathed, and the worst fear you have is not being able to fly a plane.
Yeah.
So these guys wouldn't report shit.
Well, look at Bob Lazar too.
Whole nother story.
His life is ruined.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and mainly by other people interested in the topic. It was the UFO community that tried to destroy his life as much as the government did. I mean, so there are real consequences, for putting ideas and beliefs forward that are outside of this box that Dave is describing. However, hopefully things like the naval operations reporting system, that they're trying to make it easier for pilots to do that. It's more a symbol. It's not that they have like a cool new piece of paperwork, because everybody in the Navy is like coming to me like, where's this thing, Jeremy? We saw it. Where is this thing?
Yeah, right.
It's not like that. It was a public statement to say, it's okay. We want these reports now.
You won't be accused of having a mental breakdown.
Right. Because thank God, because people like Commander Fravor came forward, balls to the wall, just said, hey, this happened to me and I'm not, that's what's up.
And then when you're looking at UFOs that are around, for example, like the atomic bomb coming off or any form of like bombs or testing, there's crafts that they find around them. Like, what do you think counterculture is going to now with ufology and how Jared, with your movie with Bob Lazar, that pushed us into another realm where it became pop culture. Where do you think counterculture now with the UFO counterculture movement, where do you think it's going to land us in like the next 10 years, 20 years?
Jeez, I don't know.
This is the first time it's ever happened. So,
it's weird because it's kind of the second time.
Well, yeah,
because in the late 40s and early 50s, the UFO story was taken seriously.
Yeah, that's true.
Until the government decided that wasn't a good idea, and they started a deliberate program of ridicule and dismissal and debunking.
Yeah.
And as I said to Jeremy, employed people who do what I do for a living to help out, by making, the easy laugh, making jokes about flying saucers and about people who see flying saucers.
Right. The little D? Remember we talked about the D's, the disclosures?
Yeah, big D and little D's.
I
know, Jerry, we've talked about it with you. Dave, what do you think about big D or little D?
Because you were mentioning, seeding and mentioning making fun of UFOs. Is that a part of this, warming people up to the idea?
No, I think it was a part of stopping people from thinking about it at all. And so it's why we now are in a situation where smart people can't even, it's not that they're blind to it, but that their brains just won't process the information and retain it.
Right.
So that smart people, like I said, I had a friend who said, oh, my boyfriend's really into this stuff, but when I see UFO, I just look the other way.
What?
Yeah. And I go, that says a lot. That's probably you're really, really revealing out loud what everyone does. It's just, ugh, whatever.
She says, when I see a UFO, I just look the other way. I'm like, oh, how many UFOs are you seeing?
That's a really solid point. Any story about UFOs just dismisses it out of hand. And anyone who talks about UFOs dismisses them out of hand.
And I've had someone say to me, too, that the one thing that they're scared of, I don't know how we got on this topic, and she didn't know that I like the topic on UFOs. And she said, she's like, the only thing I'm actually scared of is aliens. And I laughed because I'm like, wow. I'm like, you're scared of aliens? And it's almost like an irrational fear. Maybe not now, but it's almost rational. And she goes, yeah, I'm scared of aliens. And in my head, I thought, oh, you're going to be the one that if they come down here, you're going to lose your bloody mind.
Yeah.
She's just probably been watching National Geographic. Realize that we're not top of the food chain, maybe, and that's frightening. Or watch History Channel and look at what colonization does to indigenous tribes. I mean,
there is an
innate fear to a hyper-intelligent being above human. Hopefully they're vegetarian. Don't know. But there's an innate fear. There's a, some sort of larger cosmic fear, religiously for some people. Also just fear of the unknown. Also just fear of ridicule. There are all these things come into play of why we might disassociate from a very physical reality with great observations and data. It's a data-rich environment about UFOs now. But we have turned a corner in a way in that there has been a formal acknowledgement, not disclosure of anything, but acknowledgement if you just look at the evidence
and
who's saying it. Yeah. There are craft of unknown origin that are far superior to ours in our airspace, and we don't know where they come from.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to it, I happen to know, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know more than I do, I just, more than most people.
I'm confident, on that fact, but I'm just saying that that fundamental truth has been acknowledged. So that disclosure has been made. Yeah. I don't think it'd make a difference to me if a president, especially mine, would stand up and say something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're right. We have had disclosure. I think a lot of us, when they were doing, the council and stuff like that, and we're fighting for disclosure before, I don't think any of us assumed that it was going to be like this.
I want to tell you about that real quick. So that was my event with a guy
was
named
it really?
Reuben Langdon. It's a citizen hearing on disclosure 2013. Reuben Langdon is the unsung hero of that. He basically put his own finances in, his own company went down, everything. But we got Paul Hellyer and a number of people. John Callahan was head of FAA at one time. Mm-hmm. When there was a big, the largest data piece for the CIA ever obtained was from John Callahan's tapes. And he actually showed me and handed me the tapes and said, I need this information out more. I mean, you got people that came forward during that event. And that was a cry for like, hey, we want to know. We were screaming down empty hallways into empty rooms. I mean, nobody gave a shit. It was more for the public. It's like the C-SPAN of UFOs. You can see it online. Kind of boring shit. But it was good that we did it. However, the real seminal moment was that the bursting of the balloon, for anybody who's paying attention, was the December of 2017 article. But it's nothing we didn't know. George Knapp could have reported on that for a long time. It took a mass media read by intelligent people, even if they're not seeing it, to publish it. And that was a big moment. We will look back on that as the beginning of this new way we're seeing stuff.
100%. And I know Foley and Jared the same way. Dave, I've looked at your Twitter, and I know you're active on fighting back. And I see that. And it's like a contribution, like, because you're in the both our side, and we say in the pop culture world, that's pushing that into mainstream more.
When he makes a statement and someone says, I've seen it online too, and they make a statement, you're into UFOs? And you're like, yeah, how can you not be? I mean, some basic it has a big impact because, who you are, people know you, or they feel they know you.
Yeah, rightly or wrongly, I'm perceived as being an intelligent person.
Right, but also they relate to you from this external place, which Twitter is, and then you say something like that, and it flips people to start thinking about it. And it's powerful when people use their celebrity to make statements in these fields. So I'm grateful that he is repenting to the
UFO. We're repenting. We call it the repenting.
Yeah. Well, it's also like we've talked about Deep Prasad in Toronto, who's who is a quantum physicist, and he's running a company that's on the cutting edge of developing quantum computing. And so this is a guy who's got a lot to lose about being seen as a flake, because he's, first off, he's out on the cutting edge of new technology, which is risky enough. But he's come out and been very vocal about his own UFO experiences and his own abduction experiences.
Wow.
And you know, and been a strong voice for the, you know, the reality of UFOs. And but that's a guy, yeah, but that's a guy who could easily, he could lose his business over doing
this.
Yeah,
I mean, look at when Lou Elizondo came forward. This, again, this is deep in the weeds of UFO culture, but people who are into this would will appreciate it.
Go for it, man.
But
Lou Elizondo came forward, and he was the head of ATIP, which was a major military identification program about UFOs that, you know, was acknowledged. And George Knapp, investigative reporter, proved many times over that Elizondo was the head of this program for a duration of time. And he just got smashed and ridiculed. And everybody's trying to, you know, say he's not that, or he's a CIA shill, all this stuff. Basically, there was a new Popular Mechanics article that came out, and I'm glad Popular Mechanics is getting in the fight. All they really did was show what George has proven, you know, over the last 2 years. But, you know, it's a good publication.
Yeah.
But what was talked about in that article was, you know, this AWSAP program, Advanced Aerospace Weapon Systems Application Program, which was basically to study what they called the phenomenon, which was UFOs and associated phenomena. It was based around Skinwalker Ranch. That's why that program was initiated. ATIP was a military-based program, right? So the other thing it mentions in these articles, and again, it's been mentioned before, but it's a big article, was that there's biological studies being done by the CIA, but this is where they've been studying people who have had close proximity to prolonged UAP, UFO, encounters. So there is a known biological effect that occurs when you have close proximity to these vehicles, whatever they are. And that is a real study.
So like
I talked
radiation?
About it years ago.
Like a form of radiation?
Does it hurt you? Does it make you feel like...
So this is trippy. So back in the citizen hearing on disclosure, a man came forward, John Burroughs. He was part of the Rendlesham Forest situation, right? He had a heart issue that occurred, and they would not acknowledge that he was on duty at that time, at that place, when the event occurred that he needed life-saving surgery for. So because of the citizen hearing, they got John McCain's office, the congressman and senator, to sit down and go, John McCain's office, to pay attention and fight for, and got him medical disability to do this surgery to admit he was there during this UFO thing, and the UFO thing had an effect on him. Mm-hmm. Here's the craziest part. Right before he went into surgery, as he's getting the anesthesia, the hospital got a phone call from a military medical doctor that says, let me tell you exactly what you need to do to treat this.
Uh-huh.
So they at that point, he did have the life-saving surgery. There was a known database of medical information on what this UAP, you know, what a field can do to someone's heart and also to their brain, which I don't think has been reported yet, but to their heart. And so this is a body of knowledge that is so tense to tell people about, because then they're worried, what is the accidental exposure to these things? It seems accidental. It's not like they're laser beaming us or anything. So that is true. That is now acknowledged, and that is acknowledged in a major publication with documents to back it up.
Wow.
Again, George Knapp's been saying it a long time, but it's good a big publication brings it forward. I don't know how he got on that tangent.
No, but I was so into it.
But that's in terms of like evidence of it being real, that's like the fact that, you know, it's a huge, the VA had to acknowledge that he had injuries as a result of exposure to a UFO.
Yeah.
Direct.
And they had to acknowledge it in order to fund his surgery.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the first guy to ever get compensation for a UFO-related injury.
Do you guys feel like your profits for this whole, you know, topic? Because I'm listening, obviously, you came into it by way of George Knapp, was it?
Yeah.
Had it, and then
I would say Jeremy. Maybe I'm more of a cheerleader.
Yeah, nice. I got into it just like everybody else. I heard about Bob Lazar, you know, when I was 13 years old, and it flipped the script. You know, this idea of propulsion, pushing something out of the back so you can go forward. The idea of a field propulsion, I was super nerdy when I was 13. But anyway, I was really into that falling into time space. Yeah. So that's how I got into it. But how I got into really investigating it was just a determination. I stalked George Knapp.
And that was it.
That was it. Stalked him. He finally called me back, and I got into it.
Yeah, and for me, like, I'm, as I said, I've kind of been dove back into this.
Yeah.
Over the last few years, I'm trying to think. Like,
what was the first story that got you back in?
Yeah.
Got back. Well, it's coming different. Like, I got really convinced that there was none of the answers were acceptable after the Phoenix Lights.
Right.
That was just clearly seemed to be misleading the public about what happened. And the fact that the press just, it was flares. Oh, flares. Okay, everybody, don't bother.
The massive mothership.
Stop thinking about this. It was flares. And that just seemed so clearly, stupid as an explanation. So I really got into it then again. And then it was just, didn't really think about it a lot for a long time. And then, Just was more or less just thinking about the recurrence of sightings, the instance of it, how long it's been going on, and how widespread it is, and that it's throughout humanity, and going, there's no way, there's nothing there. Said I might not know what it is. It's the same thing with other sort of paranormal phenomena. I think, you know, whether it's psychic phenomena or ghost phenomena. I think the fact that these things have been reported by human beings in every culture, everywhere in the world, throughout human history.
Where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah, you can't go, there's nothing there. There has to be a reason for it. And being an atheist, my belief is that there's a rational explanation for it, that there is something that will become just considered science.
Right. It's only paranormal until you figure out the science. Like, electricity was paranormal until...
Yeah.
Figure out how it works.
Yeah. And germ theory was laughable.
Right.
Right.
Until, you know, till people stopped dying from germs.
We might be slow, but we're still here, humans.
Yeah. So I would say, like, I remember telling someone from Skeptic Inquirer magazine, they asked me, how did you become a skeptic? And I said, I don't like to think of myself as a skeptic because I don't think it's a very productive way of thinking. I believe you have to be rigorous, but skepticism, you got to remember that in centuries past, the skeptics were the people who said germs weren't real. And a lot of people died because of them. You know,
it's true.
So I don't go along with skepticism as a way of thinking.
Well, it's an important distinction. Yeah, there's a difference between a skeptical person and a rigorous person. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you just made that distinction. I think that's really important, especially when we're talking about things that, you know, it's hard to put your finger on. You know, we don't have all the answers, but we just can't deny the evidence, or we're doing a disservice to everybody and the nature of reality.
Yeah.
So. There's something you said about just having a natural curiosity about things. I mean, we're not all going to be interested in the same topics, but just having, like, being inquisitive about things that are just.
Yeah. And always saying, why isn't accepted norm an accepted norm?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, you know, I think when you fall into the framework of, well, this is something you just can't say, or this is something you just can't think, you're going to be eventually shown to be wrong.
Yeah. And we live in the space where we talked about it, about the idea of, you know, being ridiculed for sharing this. It's because we as a society have created a structure in which we communicate that allows us to be successful, I guess, so that if you don't, if you deviate from that, then they do whatever they need to do in order to get you back in line. So ridicule and fear in order to bring you back. So you stop asking those questions, but it's those who are willing to take those risks. And I mean, it's what you guys are doing. Yeah. It's like asking
George
questions.
George Abbas recently said that to me, you know, kind of what you're saying is, you know, I was getting all this, like, you know, hate mail and stuff, and I was just trying to help and put stuff out. And some of it's real violent, some of it's public, some of it's not. And then I just, as a joke, every week I forward him the top, you know, hate of the week, you know, and I, and he wrote back the other day and he's like, you know, it's not going to get any easier. And nobody said that, you know, it is. And he goes, the more that you you know, put this information out or do this. It's just polarizing. And he goes, you know, you got to have courage to fight this. You can be, as an investigator, as a reporter, whatever you're doing, you can be determined. You can have, you know, you can do all these things. He goes, but number one, you got to be courageous, because if you take on all these other people's ideas of you, you know, you're going to be paralyzed.
Paralyzed. Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
Yeah. You just got to, you got to fight through it. I think we all have to find that within ourselves. If we believe that something's worth fighting for, if it's an important story, that, you know, we can do it lovingly and gently, but you know, you have to do it courageously. You have to put yourself aside.
100%. And this is when talking about your tweets, Dave, that it's a courageous and it's a brave act to put it out. It's small, 140 characters. It might be, it might not seem like it's a big thing, but normalizing the conversation and allowing people a space to be able to share and even maybe even get into the nitty gritty with you in that forum, it allows people an opportunity to just speak.
Yeah, it opens up their minds.
And it opens up their minds and maybe helps people accept things that they might not necessarily have accepted before. So it doesn't, I just believe in general, it doesn't matter if the topic is UFOs, if the topic is sexism or racism or whatever, that little act of just being bravely sharing your opinion in small forums creates a space in which everyone, and then maybe little by little, we as a society can grow so that we're ridiculing people a little less. We can get those and we can start talking more productively about UFOs on a larger scale. I think it'd be cool.
That was a nice, no, you put that so well.
Yeah.
And people being able to come together and say, hey, I have these ideas and not feel like they're going to get crucified.
Well, I struggle with that, to be honest with you, because there's a part of me that's like, you know, we should all be able to safely say what we believe. And that's true. But then I have this other part of me that's a pit bull. And when somebody's taking advantage of people within this field on their desire to believe, I won't like go on like Twitter or something, but like I will express my opinion on if someone is a fucking bullshitter. So I struggle with that. People, I don't know the right.
I think people who are deliberately misleading people have to be called. I mean, it's the same thing. It has to be, if you're going with the facts, you know, if you're following the facts and somebody else isn't, I think it's important because that can be damaging to people.
I think so.
You know, and I don't think there's, and if, you know, that idea that everyone's entitled to their own opinion. Yeah, you can have opinions, but you shouldn't present your opinions as facts, and you shouldn't present, you shouldn't hold yourself out as an expert if you're just making stuff up.
And also, all opinions are not created equal. That might not be PC to say, but it's just true. No. You know, so if I want to know something about the mechanics of my car, I'm going to a mechanic, not to my brother, who's not a mechanic.
Yeah. Expertise is important.
Right. You know, it's not the credentials or the certificates, but generally, you know.
So I have to stop going to your brother to get my car fixed.
I told you the first time and you just don't listen. Right.
Who's, like a cool guy.
Who are you to tell me I can't do open heart surgery? You motherfucker.
Oh, never.
So many people said, how did he get to Lazar? A lot of people messaged me after that. And I said, I don't know. I need to ask Jeremy that.
Pretty face.
Because true. Yeah.
It's true.
It was easy, right?
It's true. How did you, like, because Bob hasn't told his story for so long. Yeah. You're the one who told his story. And that to me is amazing. And he doesn't talk to anybody. So how did you get to that story?
I always told him I was there. We ended up becoming friends over some time through circumstances, but I just, since I was a kid, that's the story I was most interested in. But it was just patience. I didn't come with an agenda. I don't want to just go like make a buck off something or twist his story. I just showed him what I do. And I said, I am here if you want to tell the rest of this again now. And I think I finally convinced him that history of his life would be written by the fakes and by the people that are got it all wrong and twisted his words, or he'd have to say it again because people were just born. You know, when 30 years ago he came out, they're 30 years old. They weren't even alive when he told this story. So that it was just patience. That's one thing that I have, is I'm not here for 2 seconds. You know, I'm planning stuff out years in advance to try to move the ball forward. But anyway, let's keep moving the ball forward. Yeah. I got a question for Dave. So what, you know, out of all this stuff, you know, what is your hope for the next, like, you know, 12 to 24 months within the UFO topic? Like, what is an achievable thing you'd like to see happen around the subject?
God, I like that. I don't know. It's an odd question because I'm not a person who hopes for much ever.
Okay. Well, that's your problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess what I would like to see are, I would like to see journalists that I respect covering the story in something more than you know, a man bites dog kind of curiosity.
Yeah.
You know, that here's something out of the ordinary, but as an ongoing story, mm-hmm. you know, and I would like to see people who I admire, like Stephen Colbert, take the subject seriously on a show and not, you know, do it as a midpoint of the show joke topic.
Why do you think that they're doing that? Do you think that he's just like Stephen Colbert and everyone else is just pushing it off because they don't believe, or are they being told not to talk about it?
No, you don't need to be told.
Right.
You've been raised not to think about it. You've been raised not to take it seriously. You've been raised to assume it's silly.
Yeah.
And raised to fear being perceived as silly. So there's no need for a conspiracy.
That's true. Well, Dan Aykroyd, I'm a Joe Rogan fan over here. So Dan Aykroyd said on Joe Rogan that when he did his show, and
you know,
I believe
the Psy Factor.
Exactly. And, yeah. And then they said that they just, for some reason, they'd finished it. And then I think they finished it. And then they wouldn't air it. And it never went. And he said, I
we
wonder,
could blame it on
like
the
that's
Men
a conspiracy
Black.
On its own. But yeah. Why would they not release it?
Yeah.
You know, like I think he had Stephen Bassett on there and a whole bunch of people.
We don't know if, you know, who can speculate if, like, I have never felt the pressure of people saying, no, don't do anything on UFOs. I get quite the opposite. I think, you know, people are very interested in this topic. So I've never been resisted, only assisted when it comes to getting information out.
Yep.
So this whole idea that there's, you know, some group trying to control, you know, media to not talk about it. I think Dave Foley here got it right, you know, and that we self-censor. Most of the time, we're not need to be told not to talk about.
Well, and because here's the thing: because smart people will come up to you in dismissing the UFOs, and they'll say things like, "You know, this can't be real because there's no way they could have kept it a secret all this time." And I'll say to them, "Now you understand the very fact that we're having this conversation means they didn't succeed in keeping it a secret
right,
all this
right.
time."
It's so true.
You know, I said that there's literally huge libraries full of information, of documented information about this subject that has been verified. So, no, they have, you know, said somebody would have talked. No, hundreds of people have talked over the history of this story. You know, but still in your mind, you're going, this can't be real or else it would have been leaked.
That's so true.
Like, well,
and it's like, there's a cognitive dissonance there. Yeah,
that was the first thing George Knapp's mentor Ned Day said to him when all the files came on the desk about UFOs. His boss or his colleague and mentor said, "Well, this can't be true. If any of it was, I would know about it as a reporter here in Vegas covering Area 51. Mm-hmm. I would know about it."
Yeah.
You know, and George
yeah.
said, "I'll take those," and that started his mm-hmm. career. You know,
yeah.
So that's hubris, right? The idea that
yeah.
we're going to be fully aware of this stuff. I don't know. But I think you're right. Get people coming forward. More people talking in mainstream.
Yeah. I think that's what I like.
Popular
to see.
Culture.
Because I mean, I don't think the UFOs are going to make some grand show.
Oh, clearly not. Yeah, clearly that's not been the agenda so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. When it comes to looking at pop culture, what do you think was the most influential movie or individual that's helped validate or legitimize the idea of UFOs and aliens?
Pop culture is probably Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Oh, yeah.
I'd say it was the one that, you know, that it was a whole new way of thinking about them.
Yeah.
First off, the notion of them as these ships made out of light, essentially, and about aliens as being non-threatening. So it was kind of a whole new take on, and it kept some mystery about what they were and why they were here and all that. But so I think that probably changed the way people think.
Yeah, I would agree too.
A lot.
That was your favorite, isn't it, Chrissy?
That's one of my favorites, yeah. I love Close Encounters. What about you, Jer?
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure what I think. It's a big question. I mean, I'm really appreciative for where things are now. I think we're at a really cool time where I think there's enough awareness where people can now use their pop culture status or whatever, you know, to get more information out. I think it's important. You know, I don't know. It's a cumulative thing. It's a cumulative thing. It's just it's a question that has always been hanging. Yeah. Is everybody crazy, or is there something to this? The Abyss is an important movie, actually.
It is
because James Cameron, right? Yeah. I was told from somebody who's guided my work for a long time, a military individual who was in a position to know for quite a long time, that I should pay attention, and that, you know, James Cameron probably knows some stuff. And they did a lot of advising for that film, and it is now my understanding that the majority of these UFOs, that they can traverse transmedium, right? So air, space, or sea, it doesn't make a difference, and that the best place to hide out is in the water. And if you know from the Commander Favorite Tic Tac story, there was a much bigger
ship under there,
under the water.
Yeah.
So I think the Abyss is important because it was informed by our military from people in position to know about the non-terrestrial stuff. And if it's a place where a lot of this is happening, which apparently it is, then, I mean, I don't have a submarine or I'd go.
Mm-hmm. Well, James Cameron has a submarine.
He does.
Call him up.
You call him up.
Let's call him up.
Don't ask me. Who, I don't know anybody.
We'll get James. We'll go into his submarine and we'll go see aliens.
Well, I think, isn't it, I think Deep's trying to start a company that's going to go out and try and get documentation on USOs. And
really?
That's right. Yeah, they're going to a hot spot off of the Pacific coast, and or at least this is what I read
Ensenada
on that.
Or
I don't know. And you know, this is one of those hot spots.
Yeah.
And they're going to try to observe and see what's shaking out there in the waters.
What's shaking out in the water?
Yeah. I can't get on a boat. Not 1 foot.
No, really?
Nope.
I can watch
Jaws. Yeah, go ahead.
You can have.
I'll take a helicopter.
I love boats.
Yeah. We'll set you up with a little monitor. You can see. And Dave can go down with James Cameron.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's only two people allowed in the pod. If I remember correctly from my short, brief obsession with James Cameron.
Yeah.
Don't ask. It's a very strange period of my life. But regardless, let's end it there.
All right.
Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah. Thank you. This was fun.
Thank you very much.
Have you ever, because you're very open about you love UFOs and you post about it quite a bit on your Facebook and you definitely share it on Instagram. Have you ever been ridiculed by people for your love for UFOs? Have you ever experienced that cancel culture?
Great question. So I haven't been ridiculed because I like UFOs, but I've been made fun of that I like UFOs and people thinking it's mumbo jumbo. Or just petrified of UFOs. So no, I've never been ridiculed, but I've seen other people been ridiculed. And that's scary that we live in a world like that. Like this cancel culture that we're creating is scary. And the UFO community is part of that as well too. You know, Tom DeLonge, who is a former member or still is a member of Blink 182, but they're not singing right now, I believe, started to the Stars Academy of Arts and Science. And he was ridiculed because he didn't leave Blink 182. Blink, is it Blink 182?
Yeah, Blink 182.
My brain today. He didn't leave Blink 182, but he decided to step away to start getting into researching UFOs. And a lot of people made fun of him for that. But he was the first person to come out to release that Pentagon video for the Tic Tac
incident. Yeah.
Yeah, that happened.
It's, he was the first one who released it and you know, people have fun with it. I think people have a hard time accepting whenever it's celebrities that are coming out and talking about their love for UFOs. I think they have a hard time accepting them outside of the world that they know them in. Like, because you even like take a look, Madonna. She's not necessarily, I'm not saying UFOs, but as an example of somebody who departs what everybody knows her for, is like when she was doing acting. You know, oh, she's a terrible actress, and how dare she. Same with Lady Gaga. When anybody pops out of that world, everyone's a little bit skeptical. They kind of want to hammer them back. So sometimes I wonder when celebrities are doing it, if that really is just the public trying to force them to go back to the world that they know and love them in. And
probably.
They're like,
to make them feel comfortable.
And
you know,
UFOs.
Well, that's the thing now. When we get into the Tic Tac incident that happened and saying that the Pentagon is saying that the footage is real, it changes it for everyone. Jeremy was one of the first people, along with Joe Rogan in the meme and Jeremy's movie, Bob Lazar, Area 51 and Flying Saucers.
Joe Rogan in the meme.
Joe Rogan in the meme.
that whole time when that happened,
what was it mean?
Last year. So that was Radio Area 51.
Right.
Right. That was the cast. And we talk about that in episode one with Jer. But that really was the catalyst that moved it into pop culture. Mm-hmm. And so now what we're seeing is that sync is still happening with the Pentagon. When the Pentagon came forward and said that this is real, and when Lou Alessandro, he's the former director of Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. Yep, I looked that up because I wouldn't remember that.
But nobody would have known had right. you not said that.
Right, exactly. But he was the one that came forward on CNN, and we're going to pop in a clip as well, too, where he talks about that it might, he alludes that it might be extraterrestrial, but it's the first time that a former official that is researching UFOs that worked with the United States, any form of government, has come forward and has said, yes, we were researching UFOs and this is real, which is unbelievable, but kind of in the end of it alludes that it might be aliens.
Do you believe that life from somewhere else, while you ran this program, came here, visited, observed?
I will tell you unequivocally that through the observation, scientific methodologies that were applied to look at this phenomena, that these aircraft, we'll call them aircraft, are displaying characteristics that are not currently within the U.S. inventory, nor in any foreign inventory that we are aware of.
So I know you're using, you're being clear, but I mean, the answer is yes.
I can't speak on behalf of the government. Obviously, I'm not in the U.S. government anymore. My personal belief is that there is very compelling evidence that we may not be alone, whatever that means.
Well, when was that? Because Bob Lazar was a scientist working with the government who had came forward. That was in 1989.
Yeah.
So is this Alessandro?
So this starts again. We go back to Tom DeLonge. And Tom DeLonge is like another sink in his own for doing this because he was huge in Blink 182. So when he started...
Blink 182 was huge?
Yeah, it is huge. Well, it was during that punk time, and we talk about that too in our Biff Naked episode if you want to talk about punk. But... So he actually released the footage that came from Commander Fravor, who showed this footage first in 2017. So it started all the way back in 2017. And then the U.S. Navy said that the footage was real and confirmed it last year. And 2019 was the year of the UFO. So that's when Commander Fravor came forward and said, yeah, this is real. And he talked about it with Joe Rogan. And it was a really big media moment. This should be the biggest story in the entire world.
Well,
but
you're
it's
also
not.
Biased because you yes. are a ufologist.
Very true.
Adoring UFO fan. So for you, that's definitely like the biggest story. And I think that when it comes down to scientists and the scientists that are popping in on it, yes, we have people who have studied it. But video footage of UFOs that has been released is not a substitute for numbers of scientists who are able to actually explore the scientific method.
Well,
actually.
Right. And this whole thing about Mick West that has come out, and he's he's a science writer, and he's always a skeptical investigator. So he's always trying to debunk things that are happening.
Dude, that's what a scientist is. Skeptical by nature, looking to test and retest and duplicate results in order to prove that it's real.
Right. And there's this whole cold bird theory that he has come out saying that
cold bird.
Right, I know. Saying that this UFO footage that Commander Fravor ends up saying that is real and experiencing in his life, in his eyes, as someone who's part of the Navy official, is saying it's real and this happened to me and we get to watch it as well. He's saying that it's a bird.
Look, I will tell you this.
Thank God they didn't say it was a weather balloon, because I would have just freaked. Like, well, you can't pull back. You can't do a Roswell
Chrissy, there's a weather balloon. Don't you tell me it's a weather balloon. How dare you? That's note to everybody listening to the show.
Unless it is a weather balloon.
Never point out weather balloons to Chrissy, because she'll freak out every time.
It's a UFO.
No,
yeah,
Chrissy,
but Mick West was actually one of those people that's trying to debunk it right now.
Dude,
and saying
not.
That it's not. It's a bloody UFO. I'm sorry. And when the Pentagon is saying that it's a UFO, it's a UFO.
If you can't prove, I'm sorry. Here's the thing. And I've said this before. I've said it just a second ago. You can't prove with a video footage. It is curious. It is questionable. But what it does not do, it does not prove that it is a weather balloon. It does not prove that it is a bird. It does not prove that it is a UFO. It doesn't prove anything. But what it does give us is it inspires our curiosity. And if
the government themselves is saying straight up that it is an unidentified flying object.
Yes.
It's that. I'm like, what are you going to do? Dude.
It's a big step forward in disclosure for us and saying that, and to me, this is disclosure, and Jeremy agrees with this as well in the interview, and saying that this is the first time, and it might not be the disclosure that we all want as ufologists. So big D and little D, I'll explain again.
Right? Sorry, I'm sorry. Go on.
Big D is, for example, we have a massive mothership come down, is like, hurrah, I'm alive. Right? No, right. Big D.
Massive like, mother.
Yeah, and everybody gets on the big D.
It's the fathership.
Right. It's the fathership. So that's what Big D is, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's, you know, aliens are here, and you know, and then small D is the government coming forward and saying, yes, extraterrestrials exist. Well, so for us, this is a form of disclosure, and yes, sorry, UFOs exist. Yeah. That is disclosure.
Totally.
It's not the way that maybe wanted it from a government official saying it, but
you
it's
know,
not it's not the president.
The government definitely has some real small D energy,
right? Yes, this one right now, right? Yes, this one.
So
right
of course
now.
They're going to. But I align with it. If the government is saying this is an unidentified question for you, does UFO to you, does UFO mean alien?
So that's actually a really great question too. So for the fact though, now that they've come forward and said, we've put in $22 million into research of UFOs in this Black Vault program, which is insane, but it's probably been way more than that, let's be honest. So now we look at the question of, great, UFOs are real, that the government is saying that it is. But now our second question is, what about all of these cases that are attached to alien experiences with UFOs? What do we do with that moving forward? That's what I want to know, because you can't just discredit somebody who says, well, I've had an extraterrestrial experience when I've seen a UFO. So you kind of have to go back and look at that. Betty and Barney Hill saw a UFO, one of the first documented cases ever to happen. And a biracial couple, first of all, which is crazy. I believe it was the 1930s.
They were ahead of their time.
100% they were.
Love who you want to love. Go for it.
But a lot of people didn't believe them. But then they started to, because everything was credible. Their stories lasted for so long. Same with Bob Lazar.
Let's go back to Betty for a second.
Okay,
Betty and Barney, right?
Yeah.
They're Betty and Barney.
Betty and Barney.
But here's the thing about that. When I read the story, because it was one of the first stories, you're like, you need to read this. And it's something to read. But what I really impressed me was the level of detail they're able to recall, the experience they're able to share. And it feels credible. It feels like they themselves had a level of shame when they were sharing it with the world, because obviously it's sensational. But I wonder as well if at that time, because it was a very controversial thing to be an interracial couple. I wonder if that had something to play in with the idea that it discredited the things that they had to say, because at the time they themselves were outside of the norm.
They were part of a counterculture within experiencing a counterculture with UFOs and being believers. 100% they were ridiculed and made fun of.
I think
for many different things.
But if there's people out there like, this is all poppycock. I don't believe in it.
Poppycock. Poppycock.
This is true. It's like, you know what? I think what you need to understand is that the history of this within the Navy, when it first started, there were sightings that were being reported
in
like the 40s, right in the very beginning. And what was happening at that time is that anytime somebody who was serving was reporting sightings of unidentified flying objects, they were ridiculed. And so it created the silence and this cancel culture within the Army, where people were preventing people from disclosing the things that they saw.
Yeah.
Then we got.
And that's part of that cancel culture world.
It was
internally
damaged
within the government and other organizations. You're 100% right, Marie.
And like the damage that caused, I think we're still feeling those reverberations, because it's happening at such a level that when people are coming out in the world and regular people are seeing it, or soldiers are seeing it, or the Navy seeing it, and they're disclosing it, they're being made fun of. So it's disincentivizing their chance to share something really important. But then we get to like 1951, 1953, and a new secretive program came on board, was Project Blue Book.
Yeah, and that turned into a show.
And that turned
That's
into
another
a show.
Sink.
Hello, the fantastic sink.
Right.
And the thing about Project Blue Book is that it was under the direction of Edward Ruppelt, probably says his last name, who, and he introduced the term unidentified flying object to help make it more comfortable for people to say, oh, I saw a UFO. Doesn't mean aliens, just right. means unidentified. And the whole thing that he was saying was he wanted to create a space where if anybody saw any airborne object that had characteristics that were unusual, he wanted them to hear it. And anybody who came out saying that what isn't real, he said there's no room for people to have closed minds in the Army.
It was really great to talk to them. And really great to hear Dave's perspective on UFOs and where he's going to be going in the future, hopefully with UFOs, and just a great little discussion.
Like where he's going in the future with UFOs. It sounds like he's taking a ride.
He might be. He might be joyriding. I hope we can go with him. I'm like, I want some alien juice and jump on a UFO ride. Woo!
Alien juice.
Like, so much fun. And then we'll go on to the, what's it called?
The
Fifth Element.
On the radio.
Right, we're going to go to the Fifth Element, and we're going to jump on that mothership, and then that woman, the blue woman, octopus woman, is going to sing to us. It's going to be amazing.
Multipass. Yeah. Multipass.
Chris Tucker's going to come out, and he's going to make us laugh. And we're going to hang out with Bruce Willis. It'd be great.
We could probably do that if we go to Los Angeles again. We can just hang out with Bruce Willis and do the Fifth Element. Also a fantastic film.
Such a good film.
And then let's never forget, and let's not forget Star Wars.
Yes. Oh, gosh. Yeah. There's so many different sinks within film that we could talk about.
Specifically,
but
just take this one moment and just leave people with one thought, is that there the Twi in Star Wars also looked like the opera singer in Fifth Element. There is one look for this sexy tentacled kind of alien being that seems to like exist. And there is a darker version of that, Predator.
Oh, right.
Also kind of had the same sort of vibe. I feel, I don't know, I'm just making it up right now.
We like to say thank you to our hotel sponsor,
Villa del Stella. Thank you so much for allowing us to sleep in your room.
It's so true. They have this amazing boutique hotel in downtown LA, just off of Hollywood Boulevard, that has like 6 rooms. It's stunning. We were lucky because we got to stay in the massive Art Deco suite, which is a two-bedroom.
It
has a little balcony on it, too.
With a balcony, powder room, full bathroom, massive kitchen.
Yes.
And the beds were so, so comfy.
So comfy. And
the bathtub was so big it needed a lifeguard.
That's because Marie was drowning in it.
Anyway.
Right.
Save me.
So, okay, we have to talk about the surroundings of Villa de Stella. So we're driving back to the boutique hotel, and I'm driving and Marie's like, Chrissy, and I'm like, what? And what did you say to me?
Roscoe's. Like, look, Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles is here. I know this area.
Right. I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, I thought we were like, really, we're going to get hurt. I'm like, we're downtown LA. You know, we're like two Toronto chicks. You know, like we go to LA, but we don't live there. I'm like, and you never know what's going to happen in LA any time of the day. So we're
you don't know that for the past 5 days, you've been living next door to Roscoe's Fried Chicken and Waffles.
Right.
And you didn't go and get some fried chicken and waffles. So we corrected that.
Right. And so we went there. It's also right by Dash Radio. It's right down, it's down the street from the Walk of Fame.
It's everything.
Yeah, it is. It's really beautiful. And they were so lovely, owners and the management there. They were so, so great.
Yeah, they were so good, so accommodating. The suite itself was really beautiful. We were just so fortunate to be able to work with them and stay at that particular apartment hotel. It has everything you need for just a really comfortable stay. And what I really loved about it, not only is the unit quiet and comfortable, but and it's around the corner from Roscoe's, like literally you could just yell out the window, can I get chicken and waffles, and then reach out and grab it. But beyond that, it's walking distance to everything that you want to do if you are a tourist in town. And I personally enjoy apartment hotels more than regular hotels because you have your own kitchen. You can go to the grocery store, you pick up your own fruit, you can
100%.
Have, and you can store it and you can snack on it, and you really save yourself oodles of time and money.
Yeah, and I just like that feeling. When we're running around doing meetings and recording and doing all these things, it's really nice to come home to something that doesn't feel like the sterile hotel. It actually feels like a really comfortable home, and yeah, that's what it felt like. And we're not just saying that. Like I said to Maru when we left, I was like, I was really, like, really happy that we got to stay there. And hopefully we get to stay there again when we're back in LA.
Well, I mean, I definitely want to go back and bring them some, like, Canadian treats just as, like, a thank you, because they were so wonderful to us on our stay. And they're so accommodating. We saw them with the other guests there. They're on site, and they helped to welcome you and really walk you through what's possible.
Yeah. We love you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
So if you are in LA and you're looking for an amazing little boutique hotel, go to the Villa Del Stella.
Del Stella.
Yes.
Welcome to the Villa Del Stella.
Mm-hmm. And maybe we'll see you there one day. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, we're going to be like super big celebrities.
Right. So tune in to episode 7. That's...
Tune in to episode 7. It's going to be coming out next month. But before then, feel free to chat with us online. You can reach us at...
altpoprepeat.com. Or on Instagram at
altpoprepeat.
Exactly. We're Twitter? Just everywhere at altpoprepeat. And take a moment and go to our Patreon and donate if you don't mind.
Yeah, exactly. You can get to it from our website. And definitely tune in. Ask us questions. Feel free to give us suggestions for shows you want us to tackle in the future. And don't forget, send Marie presents.
Right. We'll see you in episode 7.
Bye.
Bye.